the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And so forth. If you'd like to email, you can do that as well. It's Rick at rickemerson.com. Here's what's coming up. Ed McCarthy going to join us from Atlanta. No, he's not at Atlanta. Actually, he's in Boulder at the bottom of the hour. We got Jim Roop coming up later on. Aaron Duran will be here from geekinthecity.com. Quite possibly Clyde Lewis. We continue to talk about the snakes on a plane. We have more from Tim Riley at the City Desk, etc. Like us at 3. Donna Mike Show at 7. It's 503-733-2970. Let me read some more of this. Let's see. Oh man, don't even see, this is, I got all this email coming in about, snakes in a plane, email coming in about Vizo. We have to talk about Vizo here in just a second. Hey, do I have a Vizo, do we have a spot for them today?
No, we don't.
So it's just gonna be a thing I talk about because I'm talking about it. Alright. Subject line, S-O-A-M-F-P, Rick. A huge hissing thank you to the Rick Emerson staff, AM 970, and whoever else made it possible for me to attend the M-F-S-O-A-M-F-P preview last night. Although I was one of the more senior attendees, I had a great time with my geek brethren and sisterin. Kudos to the Greek girl, geek girl. I don't even know what I'm doing today. Kudos to the geek girl who won the SOAP t-shirt.
I feel that way every day reading some of these things.
Any movie that makes my brother shriek like a Japanese schoolgirl is bound to change history. What does that sound like exactly? Wait, hold on. What is... I have the answer right now, even as we, with the, no, that's wrong. No, that's not a Japanese anything. All right, I got nothing. My eternal gratitude to the filmmakers who understand that we need films like this. Thanks again, Patty Hill. All right, there you go. Yeah, it was a girl. We did a girl. There were girls there last night. That was the other thing. It was amazing. There were girls, some of them attractive. It was unbelievable. You could just smell the not getting laid in that room, and yet there were actual women there. And we did a trivia contest for, we had some snakes on a plane swag. We had posters and iron-ons and whatever. Apparently, iron-ons had become hip again. The kids were all over the iron-ons. But we had a t-shirt, and a woman actually knew the original director of Snakes on a Plane. So it was pretty, pretty astounding. Let us now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. I think I've actually got this here. And let me now welcome to the, and thank you, to the Rick Emerson Show from FilmFeverRadio.com, the dudes that hooked us up with David Ellis and Nathan Phillips, who were the director and co-star of Snakes on a Plane. Scott Daly, how are you, sir?
Enough is enough. I've had it with these mother effing snakes on this mother effing plane.
How great was that moment when he finally, when you uncorked that?
That was just, that
so
I wanted
great.
To hear it, but I was so busy cheering so loud along with the entire theater.
There was this great moment because that line was the whole, that was the money moment. That was the money shot for the whole film. And there was that moment when you're, and the whole, they very wisely kept that line, which has become iconic, out of all the advertising, out of the marketing, whatever. And it comes about 10 minutes before the end. And it was, the sad thing was, they should have had a countdown on the screen to like when he was going to say it. It was like 5, 4, 3, 2, because you were into the line almost before you knew it. It was like a, that's it! And then we're like, you know, and I have had it! And then the cheering of the crowd drowned out about the first half. And then the second half of the line, everybody in the theater, like 300 and some people, all screamed the line with him.
It was fantastic.
It was really, really, really great.
No, that was probably the most fun I have had in a movie theater in a long, long time.
And it was even better than the time I had at Phantom Menace, etc., because it was, because you went into it knowing the movie wasn't going to be any good. It wasn't like with Phantom Menace, where it's like, you know,
you have the life sucked out of you when you walk out of the theater.
Yeah, it's like going to see Phantom Menace was sort of like showing up to someone's birthday party and then the house catches fire and everyone dies. And it's like you're all pumped up and then at the end it's just sadness and you're out some money. This was, you went in knowing it was going to be bad. It was bad, but it was genius.
It was moments of pure genius. I mean, the moments when people cheered at the beginning of the film, you know, we're amazing. You know, Snakes on a Plane came up on the theater, and people were screaming. Well, as soon as the plane took off, people were screaming and cheering. as soon as the camera panned down below the plane to where the snakes were kept in the time compartment.
There was a visit, and of course, like all movies, it had a huge, easy to read digital LED display counting down, just like they do on every missile, every bomb, every piece of sabotage equipment, counting down until the moment when the crates blow open and the snakes come out, and everybody in the crowd is, you know, 5, 4, 3, counting down with it. I mean, the number of cheer lines in the movie, I mean, I lost track. It had 10, 12, 15, 20 moments where the theater just lost its mind.
Well, it was amazing. It was so much fun. And I got the pleasure of driving his drunk fiance, another friend of theirs drunk, and my drunk wife. We all drove to the theater together.
This is the text message I got from Aaron. I don't have my phone, but the text message I got from Aaron, I was saying this earlier, is that because Aaron text messaged me at like 8:15. He's like, "Are you there yet?" And I texted and said, "No, I'm leaving the house in a few. I had to take care of the dog and get my truck and whatever." And he's like, "We are on the way, you know, woot." And then it ends. And then like about 30 seconds later, "With hot chicks, woot." And then like 10 seconds, "And we're drunk." He screams over the text messaging, and we get there, and Aaron is just has got a huge flask, and he's just swilling vodka straight out of it in front of the theater.
Between that flask, man, myself, Aaron, my lovely wife, Jen's lovely fiance, and our friend Kat, we were just drinking from that thing like crazy. It was full intention to have it, not that I condone this, but full intention to have it in the theater while we were watching the movie. It was gone in 2 minutes.
It's good that there was no alcohol inside the theater.
That was very good, or chaos would have ensued.
It's good that people didn't continue to drink alcohol during the motion picture. Because that would have ended badly with people screaming and name gibberish at the screen all night.
Yeah, that would have been so annoying, too. I hate when people talk during movies.
Let me also talk about this. Let's talk about an awkward moment last night, which involved you and your lovely wife.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Okay. I knew this was coming. Yes.
You may remember a conversation I had with Dennis Pitzenbarger a couple days ago, because I went to Dennis's house to play poker.
Yes, Dennis, I was right there with you.
Yes, Dennis's wife, Brandy, is a very curvaceous woman, and she was wearing a very tight Storm and the Balls t-shirt, which Dennis wanted to show off to me. And Dennis wanted to indicate that these shirts were on sale, and he did so by pointing at Brandy's bosoms and saying, "Rick, have you seen these? They're brand new, but they're really great. Check them out." And it's like, you can't stare at your buddy's girls' breasts. It's just not a thing you can do. And so what does your wife do? Your wife, who's a very attractive woman and is very curvy in her own right, wears a lot of tight clothing and then sticks a bunch of snakes down the middle of her cleavage so they are hanging out from between her bosoms.
Yes, there are 4 snakes in my wife's cleavage.
And then snakes on a boob. And then as I sort of declined to look, she kept walking up to me and thrusting, pushing out her chest toward me to make me look at them. It was all very awkward and great.
Her goal for the whole night was to make you look, and you wouldn't look.
I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy, sir.
We all had a very, very, very good time last night.
Yeah, no, it was great. Well, is there anything on the horizon at all in any way that is going to be like this? I mean, as we've finished, the Star Wars movies are done. King Kong is done. This is done. I mean, there's no Indiana Jones 4 any ever coming. I think we all know that. Is there anything on the horizon film-wise, Scott Daly, that is going to be like this?
Of this magnitude, I would say we'll be hard-pressed for a long time. I mean, there's many films coming up. One we saw a trailer for last night, the new Scorsese film called The Departed. That looks amazing.
That does look great.
As far as this magnitude of this insanity, no. I don't foresee anything coming anytime soon.
Because they almost, I mean, as much as they sort of capitalized on this once they knew all the hype was there, they didn't plan it.
No, they really didn't.
They did sort of trip and fall into a stream of gold, and then they started cranking it up once they realized what they had. But I don't think you could have planned this buzz if you had tried. And certainly, that's the other thing, is you know people are going to try. From now on, people are going to be trying to manufacture a hype like this, and I don't think it's going to work most of the time.
It's going to be sad, because you nailed it on the head there. They're going to manufacture that. This kind of thing needs to come organically. This kind of thing needs to come from within and needs to just naturally happen.
You can't
market this. You can't make this happen. You can't force something like this. Because the film-going audience, you know, say what you will about everyone in that theater last night, you know, we know what we're being played to.
Yeah. No, it's true.
And there's no playing here at all involved. This is strictly giving us what exactly what we want, a crappy movie that we're going to go and have a ball and have fun. And you know what? I'm sad to say this, but next week or so, this will be hyped, and then it will be done because everyone's experienced it. You can't go see this movie by yourself. You can't go with your girlfriend or whatever and sit in a little theater and have a nice evening. You've got to have a theater full of drunk, rowdy people.
And, you know, Nate, who is Sarah's boyfriend, was there listening, and Nate made the best observation. He made many great observations, actually. But the first, he just said, he's, you know, we're watching it, and there was some moment. It was a moment where, how do I put this? It was a moment where a man had, he'd gone into the lavatory to relieve himself. And there was some unpleasantness that ensued, involving his pants being down and a snake.
Yes.
And then some ouch, and a lot of guys in the audience screaming and going, "Oh God, no!"
Oh,
and Nate made the observation, he's like, "This movie's never going to be this good again. Like this first pass through the movie, it's like the first bite of the apple. It's always better than the rest." You know what I mean?
That's exactly right. I was thinking about this earlier today. I'm thinking, you know, even if we went back and tried to experience that again, it's not the same.
No, but
you cannot recreate that.
But alcohol will help. So
alcohol will help, and it did help. And that was just kind of fun. It was so great seeing everybody out there. It was great giving away swag to everybody.
We're kind of, your phone's kind of cutting out, so we're going to have to probably cut it short a little bit. Your phone's kind of freaking out. But filmfeverradio.com, the new episode is up.
This new episode will be up tonight. We're going to use the interviews we did this week with director David Ellis and the brilliant actor Nathan Phillips.
Yeah, we got to, in fact, I got to make sure that gets excerpted out and sent to you guys so you can post it.
Yes, his acting was just stunning, wasn't it?
His acting?
It was quite amazing. It was a thing of beauty right there on that screen. Yeah.
I have no words.
With our comments on the film and last night's debauchery and just, yeah, well, we're actually going to tape a show after your show today. I'm going to get back into town. We're going to do that.
Right on.
So
excellent.
Up later tonight.
All right, Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
All right, talk to you soon. There you go. We should break here. When we come back, what do we got here? We got people calling about snakes on a plane, of course. It's 503-733-2970. Also, you can talk to Ed McCarthy. Later on, Jim Roop, Aaron Duran, Geek in the City, more from the City Desk with Tim Riley. You stay right there. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program on Snakes on a Plane Day. Don't go anywhere. It's 503-733-2970. Yeah. All right, there you go. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. What are you doing?
I'm just making sure my microphone wasn't on.
Hello. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rickemerson.com. We have one phone line open. We don't. Let's see. We got the calls about snakes on an MFing plane. I will say this about that moment when he said, "That's it!" And then he kicked. In my head, here's the only problem with that moment. It was great.
Well, it was awful because you couldn't hear it because everyone was saying the line.
Yeah, totally. Everybody cheers because he's like, because we all knew the line, which is, "That it, that's it. I have had it with these MFing snakes on this MFing plane." And so as soon as he's like, you know, "That's it," we're all, you know, and then we just start chanting the line along with him. The only problem is because they've been very cagey about the marketing. And so they haven't put in any of the commercials, any of the online stuff. Like, you haven't been able to hear it anywhere. It's just a thing that we sort of knew about. So all of this time, I've been constructing it in my head. Like, I've been manufacturing that scene in my head. Like, wondering, it's going to be the best moment ever. Just totally getting all, I've been getting all Ed Grimley about it for the past few weeks. I've just been walking around, you know, it's going to be very exciting, I must say. He's going to, you know, and it's, so I've totally been all, pumped up and excited about the, you know, "That's it" scene. But in my head, here's what happens. In my head, he's like in the cockpit or he's back somewhere behind a door. And the way that it played out in my imagination for many weeks is just when he just goes wham and just kicks a door open and then suddenly is in full frame and then says it. So
you could tell that they reshot that because you couldn't even tell he was in the airplane and he was all shiny.
That's it. I am in a hallway somewhere in Hollywood pretending I am on a plane.
It was a super close up of his face. Nobody else in the shot. No telling things, traits that he's in a plane.
Totally. His weight's all different, whatnot.
Yeah.
There's all, look, let me just say this too. As you go through, this is the worst movie ever. I mean, it's terrible. It's stitched together with and just made with baling wire and staples.
It starts strong. The storyline that they began with was great.
When you say strong, I mean, look, from like the second frame, you know it's a bad movie, though. I mean, the production values are terrible. It looks like a straight-to-DVD, straight-to-sci-fi movie. It's like
that actor that we talked to is the worst actor I've ever seen.
Nathan Phillips?
Ever.
My mouth is open throughout the whole film. I am breathing through my mouth like a slack jaw through the entire motion picture. He never closes it. That's
a
drinking thing.
And he never says anything.
No, he just sits there and looks stupid. But Sarah's first, which, he's hot. Oh, my God. So
he was hot until he opened his mouth. Just like Tucker Carlson.
Just like girls, until they speak.
Oh, was Tucker Carlson in this?
No, but he was beautiful until I heard him talk.
Tucker Carlson was beautiful. You used to be beautiful. What's happened to you, Tucker Carlson? But the movie looks like a decent budget, straight-to-DVD, straight-to-sci-fi channel movie. Oh. But then there are big chunks of it. It's so easy to spot what they filmed later when they were like, we got to go back and put more boobs in this. And it's like, it's so clear what was filmed after the fact in like a marathon 72-hour session somewhere. Let's get a couple of these calls and then we'll get Ed McCarthy, who's in Boulder, Colorado right now. Charlie.
Yes.
Charlie, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am a Roland sister. What's up in your world?
So the reason why I called earlier, and I don't know if you got to it. I've been listening for a while, and I don't think you did, but the cigarette things in your car?
Yes.
Those are tubes. People buy those in, like, to roll cigarettes in a cigarette machine. So they come empty.
Oh, really? So you can buy empty cigarettes?
Yes.
That's bizarre.
So they were celebrating their auto theft by buying empty cigarettes.
They
were going to make a night of it.
Smoke the paper.
I see. So is that if you buy the empty tubes so you can fill them with greenery?
No. Well, I mean, okay, you could.
Why would you buy empty cigarette tubes?
To put tobacco in it. It's cheaper than buying packs of cigarettes.
God, smoking is retarded, and smokers are dumb. Let me just say that right now. I don't mean any disrespect to the people I know who are slaves to that habit. But, I mean, it just seems like a lot of work, says the guy who made Scotty walk like 15 blocks out of his way this morning to buy me some Viso so I could do the program without imploding. I'm just saying it's all going to kill you anyway. Just buy whatever's cheapest. All right, well, whatever. Okay. And you have some movie information for us.
Oh, I was just thinking that, you know, after Snakes on the Plane is gone and you're not looking forward to anything, you could all look forward to the Santa Claus 3 with Tim Allen.
I like how you followed it up with Tim Allen. Because I wasn't sold on the concept.
But no, it's like Rudolph's Revenge. Where he kills Tim Allen for dragging him for a decade through crappy movies.
What?
Did you hear me?
No.
I'm so sorry. I'm cutting out.
Your phone is... Oh, that's too bad. Oh,
you're such a jerk.
See? But when it's done perfectly like that...
That was perfect.
They think it's their own fault. And then so not only do you get rid of the bad call, but then they feel guilty about it the rest of the day.
Or else she's listening.
Oh. Hello. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. CNN Radio Correspondent.
It's the mix of talk that makes you feel so good.
CNN Radio Correspondent Ed McCarthy. Hello, Ed.
I can't stand it. That is just so good. You played that once for me and what you do. I just heard it now, and you get rid of a caller using that noise.
No, it's fantastic. And then they spend the rest of the day cursing themselves for lousing up a phone call.
Oh, my sides are ready to split.
That
is just too good.
Well, I was trying to keep the audience riveted. And plus, you know, there's just no graceful way to exit some of those calls.
No. That is a classic. I love that.
All right.
And then I also heard my laugh as I was listening to, and then I heard the noise. And I said, when you go from my laugh to the noise, you know you really got to get rid of them.
It really is a cavalcade of whimsy here. You have no idea, by the way, how often your laugh turns up on this.
We
on
use
this show.
It constantly.
like 10, 12 times an hour that laugh pops up.
Well, you're glad I don't ask for royalties, you know?
No, it's true. And Roop's laugh is terrible. We tried to get something from Roop, but it's just no good. Where's Roop? It's dumb. Hold on. Wait. There you go.
It's like a little chuckle.
It does. It's just... It sounds like a record skipping.
I'm just so punchy today. I've been like about an hour's sleep after this flight down here yesterday.
That's okay. Like, I mean, and I look, and there's are you, because you are, what time zone is Boulder in?
Boulder is the mountain, so now I'm back. I always hated the central zone when they're out there, because we're always reporting on Eastern time, so now we're back too. So it's...
There's no graceful way to sort of segue into this, but I mean, I don't know what's worse or not. The fact that this, I really honestly don't know which of these things is worse. The fact that this guy, whatever the hell his name is, I don't even have it here. What is, I've forgotten his name. His name is...
John Mark Carr.
John Carr. The fact that he might just be some insane freak who did this horrible crime, or the fact that he's some insane freak that just wants to get attention by saying he did it, and now that we're just wasting everybody's time and giving him exactly what he wants, which is all this damn attention for something he probably didn't even do. What is the general consensus right now about this guy? Because it seems to be leaning towards fake confession.
That's the whole thing. Everybody here, you know, you'll get some people who say, well, we want to make sure we give him his due here, whatever. But most people I talked with today, they really think that the guy, one woman said to me, she said, he's a freak.
He obviously, whether he did it or not, he's obviously a whack job. I mean, we can tell that.
No, she called him an attention-getting freak.
Yeah, that's totally what he is. And, you know, there's something I think it is indicative of many, many undesirable traits in a man that he decides to leave here and to go be a second grade teacher in Bangkok, Thailand. Right there, I think that tells you about 90% of what you need to know.
Well, you heard about some of these emails, right?
No, I haven't.
Well, let me just, I just got to read one of these to you, because you'll just absolutely want to vomit after you hear this one. One of them he goes, JonBenet, my love, my life, I love you and shall forever love you. This was an email sent December 23rd, 2005. Now, he was sending him through this professor, you know, and he says, I pray that you can hear my voice calling out to you from my darkness, this darkness that now separates us. And one message was entitled, Pretty Little Boy. He claims he was the subject of a four-state federal investigation for child murder and child molestation. Now, that investigation never happened, according to officials. So, you know, more and more what this guy has said is just not really adding up to a hill of beans here.
So the question, well, I mean, and then of course the question is, now, is it true that he is convicted in the past on child porn?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
That is true. And then he gets another teaching job after that. Figure that one out.
Jesus. And so I guess my question is, let's assume for the moment, because I think a lot of people are, as I said, leaning this way. It's sort of 60-40 right now. But let's assume for the moment he didn't do anything with JonBenet, and it's all just some sort of retroactive false confession to get attention, da-da-da-da. I mean, he does clearly seem like a guy who shouldn't just be out there walking the streets, though. So the question is, do you think that he did something... And he's just he figures he's going to get nailed on whatever it is he actually did anyway, and so he might as well grab a little limelight before they nail him for whatever he actually did. Or, I mean, is this guy going to end up being locked up for some reason? I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, I think they're going to eventually. You know, if the investigators aren't talking about that case. You know, they're looking at him as a pedophile. I guarantee you that's what's going to happen.
Right. And then,
they want to lock him up.
It's also a felony, I would imagine, to be screwing with the police this was a textbook example of interfering with a police investigation.
Yeah. It should also be a felony to walk around with your pants that high.
Totally. Man, is that true or what? What is it? We had this discussion on the show many, many times about, that's typically a thing you see in 75-year-old guys who stand on their lawn with a rake, you know, or just, you know, it's true. Stand out there with a garden hose yelling at teenagers to get off their lawn.
Get off my lawn!
Okay, Scotty, please now to excerpt that out. That'll be the next thing we play. Somebody gives us muck, we yell Ed McCarthy screaming, get off my lawn.
When I was a kid, I got to tell you this quick. We had an old Italian guy we used to cut through his yard. That guy was here from Italy, and he used to go out in his yard, and he used to yell out, No trespassage! No trespassage!
Old men are the same no matter what culture they come from.
You know, and we knew what he meant, but we still cut through his yard anyway to get mad.
No, there's an understood universal old guy tone. And the implication is always, I'm going to take off my belt and I'm going to come over and beat you senseless. It's always some guy that's got a sleeve rolled up with cigarettes in it. He took lead at the Battle of Anzio, and he's just waiting to take all that irritation out on a child. This guy looked, I think we mentioned this yesterday, this guy, what freaks me out is how much he looks like Lee Harvey Oswald.
I know, I thought the same thing. Isn't that, that's just mind-blowing, isn't it?
It really is creepy on a whole lot of levels. So I think probably the upshot here is it's good news one way or the other, because either he did it, and we can sort of just put this horrible thing behind us and quit dwelling on it every Christmas when they run these news stories about America, you know, the littlest angel found 12 years ago, whatever, just the fact that the media has to regurgitate it every year, or... he didn't do it, but they're going to stick him in a hole somewhere just for being a freak and a misfit. And you know, we won't read about him actually being arrested for something 2 or 3 years from now.
Yeah, we're going to see if he gets in here over the weekend, if they're going to try to pull that off, or if he's going to come next week. But they're going to bring him back here from Thailand, because I think that's going to be one of the deals that's going to happen.
Really, any time the phrase, we're going to bring the guy back here from Thailand for questioning, that's a guy who ought to just be in a little box somewhere, you know? You know, well, It's so true.
Out come the bamboo shoots.
Exactly.
I hear you.
Nos trespassitia. All right.
Nos trespassitia.
Fantastic. Ed McCarthy, my friend, enjoy your weekend to whatever extent you can. I'm sure we'll be talking to you next week about this.
Oh, absolutely. We sure will.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ed. Your phone's breaking up. I can't. No. Oh, no, we're losing. All right. No, thank you, Ed. And, oh, man, now he's gone. Oh, I'm sorry. We lost Ed McCarthy there. Ed McCarthy, CNN radio correspondent. Thank you, sir. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
From higher top to bottom of the coin tower, downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the Ministry of Truth. Tim Riley reporting. More of that man, armed and dangerous, running around near the grotto.
Oh, I see. You're actually going to tell us something this time instead of terrifying us and then moving on to a story about chocolate?
Well, I have more information.
You're all going to die. Now
I have
sports.
More information.
Okay.
Well, North Skidmore, which runs next to the grotto, is shut down to traffic, and some nearby homes have been evacuated as well. The incident began with a domestic disturbance call from a woman who says she was confronted by this guy at her house. And then she ran to the grotto to escape the fellow, who she said had a gun and had been up for several days and high as a kite on drugs. Dozens of police officers on the scene and barking dogs trying to sniff him out.
Okay. Oh, wait, Scotty, is this the Josh, the guy? It says here.
The guy with the gun?
Yes, the guy with the gun is taking this opportunity to call us to chat about snakes on a plane. Okay, well, let's see here. This is, you may have heard me telling this story yesterday. When I picked up my vehicle from the impound yesterday, after paying a hefty fee to the man, by the way. The jackass who stole my car just drove it until it ran out of gas, dumped it, left it filled with empty cigarettes and liquor, and then abandoned it. So anyway, so I picked it up, no gas, driving around Tannisbourne. I don't know anything about Tannisbourne. I can't find my way anywhere. I got nothing. And so I rolled into the Costco gas station. I'm like, you know, so thank God, thanks sweet Jesus, there's gas. The guy, I'm sorry, sir, you're not a Costco member. You'll have to leave now. And as I was rolling away with a defeated look in my eyes, the last spark of hope having been crushed out of my soul, this guy ran after me, and he's like, no, sir, you look desperate. I will give you gas. And it really just turned my whole day around, because if I'd been stuck in Tannisbourne at 7 o'clock, it would have ruined my whole snakes on a plane experience.
Mercy is tonight.
Not tonight, Bishop. Is this Josh? Hello?
Yeah, what's up?
Is this the Josh? You are the guy?
Yep.
Okay, you're not calling to screw with me now?
Nope.
All right, because we'll get that occasionally where we're like, so we're looking for the guy who witnessed the crime, who blah, 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 and some guy will call up and it's just an excuse to say Baba Booey.
What color shirt were you wearing when Rick met you?
I was wearing a blue and white shirt.
I don't even remember if that's the case or not. I was all fixated on getting the snakes on a plane on time. All right. Well, so I will tell you, sir, this is a fantastic thing you did. And it is, again, I want to be very clear. It's not like a plug. It's not being paid for it. And I should note that I paid for the gas. This is not because I had the cash. I had the card in my hand. But I was so terrified that you were going to, like, turn me away, because I had no idea where I was going to go. And I just had visions of myself wandering in the desert, the sun beating down on me, and then vultures pecking out my eyes days later, and no one ever figuring out what happened to me.
I would have known.
So, well, that... he came by a couple days ago, and I turned him away. I'm not sure what happened to him. So I just want to thank you, sir, because I got to tell you what, we on this radio program, as you may have noticed, we are a radio program with a little bit of, we are known to complain loudly and vociferously about some things.
Yeah.
And we are known to, we are known to often lament the fact that we are surrounded by idiots in this world, and to complain about customer service, complain about getting the short end of the stick, complain about getting the fuzzy end of the lollipop. But I do want to take this opportunity to point out when something good happens now and again, and I want to, you did not have to do that. You didn't have to help me out. I wasn't a Costco customer. You could have turned me away. You could have said, go pound it, friend. But you didn't. You helped me out. And, man, I am eternally indebted to you. So I do want to thank you. And if your manager is listening, I want to tell him you did a great thing for a guy who needed it yesterday. And if he's not listening, I will call him and tell him that.
He's probably not listening. He's probably working about now.
Yeah. Well, it is his loss then. So I will call him and let him know that that you gave a brother a hand. And so for that, sir, I am in your debt.
Yeah, you're cool, man.
All right. Josh.
Couldn't just turn you away, you know?
What's that?
Couldn't just turn you away.
Did I look desperate? Did I have a beaten look on my eyes?
Yeah, you're kind of looking shaky there.
All right. Well, sir, well, Josh, thank you. I appreciate it, man. You take it easy, and I hope you keep listening. All right, brother?
I will.
Thank you. There you go. That's Josh.
That's all the right kind of hospitality you find on that set.
Sir, no, it was like...
you find that in the big city? No.
You get so used to people just being, screw it. Make your own luck, Rick. You know, and that guy totally helped me out. Let's talk to Brad. Brad, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Brad. You were at Snakes on the Plane last night.
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah. You know, it's such a great children's movie. You know, I was glad I brought my kids.
Especially to hear me and Corten Fatboy using the phrase MFing snakes like a thousand times.
I prepped them early. They said, you know what, this is nothing we haven't heard in junior high every day.
That's what you want to hear from your kids.
Yeah, I know. But it was so funny that every single airplane movie stereotype, I mean, the first 10 minutes was so funny when they were starting to get on the plane. I thought I was going to see Robert Hayes get on board so he could fill in for the pilots who were inevitably going to, you know, keel over or whatever.
Oh, I know. That's it. At any point in the movie, if the guy in the tower had just gone, it looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines. Like, it totally would have fit right in.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
It was that guy, who was that first pilot who was basically Robert Stack, not the guy from Anchorman.
That guy was great.
But the other guy that goes down into the hold, I know I'm ruining the whole film here, but he goes down to the hold and you'll never guess. There are snakes and they're on the plane. And he puts his hand into a thing and a snake. That guy was like, Robert Stack is dead, so that's the guy you go to. Yeah.
It was fantastic. I was waiting for the nun and the sick kids and the, you know, and then.
Traveled the banks of the River of Jordan. Yeah.
But I did like the 40-ouncers that kept rolling down the...
and that's... It's funny how that's a sound that everybody instinctively knows, too. When you hear the sound of a bottle hitting a theater floor, you know exactly what's going on right there.
Was that 40 ounces of Coca-Cola?
Yes, 40 ounces of fun.
I knew right where Sarah was sitting, too, and it sounded... strikingly like it.
Oh, whatever.
Area.
I was on the other side of the theater.
And Sarah was drinking out of a can anyway.
Yeah, they were 16-ounce cans.
I called her and asked her for a flask because she didn't come through.
Well, the flask was empty.
Why is everyone calling me for the alcohol? You should be giving it to me, Brad.
Because you're a drunkard.
Thank you, Rick.
What?
I'm not the one who brought it.
Ain't gonna lie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look me in the eye and tell me you're not.
I'm not.
Let me not say without laughing.
That was the perfect movie for junior high kids.
If you are, how old are your kids?
11 and 13. The other kid I brought was 13. I'm sure his parents were real happy about that.
If you were a 13-year-old, I mean, first of all, that you got an adult cool enough to take you to an R-rated movie. Because I did, my parents would never take me to an R-rated movie. If I wanted to go to one, I had to sneak in. I had to, get my sister. My sister took me to see them occasionally if she thought it was a movie that we should see. If 13, you have a cool, you know, older person who'll take you to see an R-rated film. And then it's a movie that is just full of boobs and snakes and blood and profanity and Samuel Jackson. I mean, what else could you ask for? It really is a perfect film in many ways.
Well, I'm trying to prep them so that they don't end up like the balance of the audience, as my 13-year-old said, you know, that most of these guys would never end up in the bathroom with a woman.
It's true. No, it was amazing that there were as many women there as there were. Yeah.
Which is a little suspect in itself.
Yeah, well, a lot of rental women there last night.
I think so.
All right, Brad, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Let's go back to Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Lingerie-clad women are cutting men's hair at night. This comes to us from, here's a name from Sarah Dillon's past, Cor Harland.
Oh,
he's getting to the core of the story.
Well, some residents of Northeast Portland are concerned about a new hair-cutting business that may be attracting people who want more than just haircuts. This place is called Foxy's. Next door, longtime barber Gary Gleason says he's been told Foxy's is an all-male beauty salon, and they don't open till 5 or 6 at night, and they don't close till midnight.
Foxy's sounds like an all-male beauty salon.
Mm-hmm. Then when they want only men, it makes you think that somebody may be playing patty cake. Well, maybe this is a kindergarten.
Somebody may be playing patty cake, really?
Perhaps even Simon Says.
Did somebody knuckle it out on the street and that... Somebody knuckle it all over the street, and that's why you got to hook up with a dame and get the wire on the guy?
Yeah, the tomato cut my hair.
Who's she eating lunch with these days?
What about that dame? Foxy's owner says, yes, their girls do cut hair in sexy lingerie. They bring their own cutting tools, and they cater to men who want their hair cut at night.
This is going to be one very sexy beard grooming.
Mm-hmm. So that's all we know at the moment.
Sarah's crossing her arms and just mouthed the words, I'm very mad at
you. So it's amusing that Aaron's out front drinking a flask, but I have a couple of tall boys, and I have the drinking problem.
Oh, no, Aaron's a drunkard, too.
Okay.
I mean drunkard in a fun, casual kind of... I mean, no.
How tall were these gentlemen?
Look, I mean...
They were 16 ounces.
No, there's nothing
You're a Dudley Moore drunk. You're not a Jack Lemmon, Days of Wine and Roses drunk. Who's the woman in Days of Wine and Roses? She has the guy's name, doesn't she?
No, I can't think of her name.
It's, Days of Wine and Roses. Jack Lemmon and...
Oh.
Ted? No, it's a woman with a... wait. No,
Andy?
I was gone. Phil, Keith, Mick, Karen,
Steven.
There's a fire in the barn. No, but there's, but no.
I stayed far away from Brad's child last night.
No, so. here's the thing when I say you're a drunkard.
I had two beers.
I'm speaking in a generalized sense.
Whatever.
I'm saying you're a very pleasant person when you've been drinking, though. You will know, when have I ever complained about it? When have I ever complained about it or said that you are unpleasant to be around, when you have had a few? I have never said that because, and there are very few people, because here's the thing, is that the way you act when you're drunk, and I don't mean you, I mean in general, but people, the way you act when you're drunk, for most people, the way you act when you're drunk is not, it's like when you videotape yourself having sex. The way you look is not the way you think you look. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know, Winslow.
I know, I don't want that phrase to come out of your mouth.
I know, I'm just saying that's a reference to the old Sam Kinison used to say. He used to say that, you know, he used to think you're John Holmes, you think you're whoever, but in reality you're like two shaved polar bears at a zoo, you know, and that's just, and it's a whole lot of it, and that's no good. And it is the same with drinking.
I suppose not.
Most people believe that drinking makes them funnier, more sociable, more likable, makes them more witty. That's not usually the case. Usually drinking just makes you an ass. But there are a couple of people who are exceptions to that. Aaron is an exception. Aaron drunk is the best thing ever.
He is the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Aaron is hilarious anyway. But, man, you get Aaron loaded and it's like, it's to the 10th power. Clyde is the same way.
Just the things coming out of his mouth. I couldn't even believe it.
You get Clyde drunk, and Clyde does a couple things. Clyde is funnier when he's drunk. He's funnier when he's otherwise intoxicated. He also, when he's drunk, is a fantastic bowler. You don't know this about Clyde, and you really should. The drunker Clyde gets, and I know everybody says that I drop better when I'm drunk. None of those things are true. But Clyde, drunk, best bowler you have ever seen. He's like Lebowski bowling. I mean, it's insane. Though, and the thing about you, Sarah, is you become, how do I put this? You just become very fun-loving. You become a very jocular person. I don't want to say jolly, because it makes it sound like you become fat. You become Burl Ives.
You become fat and red-faced.
You
have a holly jolly time.
You become Sebastian Cabot when you're drunk.
Okay, now I'm sorry for getting so defensive.
Yeah, it sounds like...
You're calling me a drunkard. That's not usually a term of endearment.
There's a difference between calling you a drunkard, which is funny, and calling you a drunk... Which would not be. Do you see the difference there? It's like calling you...
You got all serious, Rick.
It's, no. I'm saying, comedically speaking, drunkard means one thing, and I think linguistically speaking, and drunk means another. It's a difference. If I were to call you a harlot, It's kind of funny, and everybody knows it's, you know, you're kind of a saucy woman. If I was just to say, you are a slut. Sarah Dillon, you're a goddamn whore. Then everything, clearly that means something else altogether.
If given a choice, then I'd rather be called a drunkard.
Yeah.
A drunkard or a slut.
Can I call you a whore, Rick?
Would you like to be called a whore, a drunkard, or a plain drunk?
I'm the drunkard, you're the whore.
And we're going to play Battle of the Sexes when we come back right after this. I don't mean to hear either of those things.
How many Bezos is this?
How is this going to look?
What'd you say, whore? I need another Visa.
How is this going to look on that Live Journal page? It's just going to be a lot of, Sarah's a drunk. No, a drunkard. Rick's a whore. Sarah's a slut. none of these things are true.
We're looking for a new zany morning show. We just happen to be listening to that.
Who are these people calling?
That's okay.
Oh, wait, hold on. This is somebody clarifying. John, hello. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
Don't call me a whore, please. Yes?
Okay. Yeah, well, I just wish Dale had been at that event you did last night because I live 6 blocks away.
Are you speaking another language? I'm not understanding anything you're saying.
Booba Shabula. Anyway. Malala Shabula.
Booba Shabaya.
The name you're looking for with...
crazy.
Yeah, no, Jack Lemmon is Lee Remick.
Lee Remick, Days of Wine and Roses.
Okay, you can talk to me anytime you need to know about anything that old people know about. But I still love your show. I'm one of your in-the-car nose pickers, so.
Okay.
Oh, you should play the theme for me.
Booba Shabaya.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Scotty has created, a second delivery driver sounder.
Oh.
A new one to replace the old one, which was unpleasant. Let me play the, let's see, here's the, this is the, I have not heard this.
We are in-the-car nose pickers.
And you're... Okay. So this is the new delivery driver sounder from Scotty J. Let's now listen.
Yeah.
No. Oh, no.
Doesn't come through well on a cell phone either.
No, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, are you going to do this again sometime for the Snakes on the Plane? Want to try it for an encore?
What do you mean? Oh, with the actual film?
Yeah.
I don't think I could take another installment of last night. I just don't. I think it might actually kill me. But I encourage you, but this is seriously now, I'm telling you now, if it's a choice between seeing it tonight and waiting and seeing it with your friends, wait, gather friends, get all drunk, go see it.
Well, I was thinking about, like, downtown Oakland, California on a Saturday afternoon with the brothers. They really enjoy a good movie.
Booba Shabaya.
We have to go now.
See ya.
Thank you.
Did we just have an earthquake?
No, they're digging up in the street, and it feels like the towers are about to collapse around us.
No, they're doing a lot of construction in the street outside, and it makes the whole building shake and the lights flicker.
Which doesn't make us feel very good, because this entire building could collapse on us since we're on the second floor.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Booba Shabaya.
Take a break.
Booba Shabaya's out in the hallway.
I am the Eggman.
And be quiet, whore.
It's a good thing that people aren't at all times just randomly flipping through the dials, landing here and hearing phrases out of context. I was calling Rick a whore. Hello, it's the Rick Emerson Show. We'll be back after this. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. We come back. Clyde Lewis, Aaron Duran, later on, Jim Roop. You stay right there. Don't go anywhere.